Welcome to the Archives of the Loralee Show, Conversation for Exploration. Timeless discussions to challenge and expand our worldview. And while you may find our guests fascinating, the views expressed may not necessarily reflect those of our own or of the Cuyamangue Institute. That's why we call it Conversation for Exploration. And join in our ongoing live events, interviews, our own presentations, and much, much more as we go exploring. Learn more at CuyamangueInstitute.com and Loralee.com. Welcome to Conversations for Exploration. Hi, I'm your host, Loralee. So what can science tell us about spiritual healing? After all, this is a field that's a little bit hard to test in the laboratory and under the microscope. Well, it turns out plenty, because there have been lots of scientific studies done on the various modalities of spiritual healing, from prayer on down through the rest of them. And Dan Benor, who wrote Spiritual Healing, Scientific Validation of a Healing Revolution, is here to tell us what he's found. Hi, Dan. How are you?
Great, Loralee, and good to be on your show.
What set you off on this mission to look at all of the various studies that have been done in this field?
I used to be a horrible skeptic. Being trained in medicine and psychology and psychiatry and research, I was just certain that healing was nonsense, that it was placebo or suggestion or denial of serious illness. And a friend challenged me, saying that how could I possibly criticize something if I hadn't ever studied it or looked at it? This was back in 1980. So rather reluctantly, I went along to observe a healer who was doing a laying on of hands treatment for a young man who had a lump under his nipple. Well, this little lump, in a period of half an hour, shrank by a half centimeter. And it went from being rubbery firm to being soft, and from being very tender to being not tender at all.
This thing was big enough that you could see this shrinking, this half a centimeter?
Well, I couldn't see it.
Was visible under the skin? I mean,
I could palpate it with my fingers. And the healer invited me to check it out before and to check it out after. And it had actually shrunk. Now, if there had been another doctor there with me, and if we hadn't both agreed before and after, I would have probably had what I call retrocognitive dissonance, where I just have my mind boggling over something that feels impossible. And I would have said to myself, oh, I must have mismeasured or I must have misremembered. But because there was another doctor there with me, I couldn't deny what I'd observed.
And it impressed him equally as well, huh?
This other doctor confirmed exactly what I was perceiving before and after. Well, that was a cure for the young man's lesion. It was also a cure for my skepticism. But it aroused my curiosity, and I started exploring whether there was any research that had been done, because even though I had seen something and experienced it firsthand, so to speak, I needed scientific confirmation in order to convince me that this wasn't something just, you know, completely out of the ordinary and unheard of by other people.
You know, some of us have a mindset where the stuff is just impossible, and some of us just have a natural, innate, inherent mindset where, yes, of course, this is possible. What was your whole life about that led you to such firm skepticism prior?
Well, in medicine, we're taught that you don't accept something that could just be suggestion, because suggestion or the placebo response could get a person over many illnesses, even surprisingly, some of the illnesses that we are generally taught can't be cured.
But yet they recognize the placebo effect as doing that, they just said. And it seems to me that they just say placebo effect when they're really looking at a profound healing mechanism.
You're so right, Loralee. And over the years, I've come to understand that and really to respect the fact that the placebo reaction is a manifestation of self-healing. For the doctor, though, who is doing research, it's a nuisance to have a placebo effect, because the doctor is looking at comparing one group that doesn't get treatment with another group that's getting a known treatment that the doctor is prescribing.
And he wants that known treatment to work or not work, and he's saying, okay, materialist substance here, you and you alone can do the job, and consciousness, get out of here and go sit by the sidelines, basically.
Very
so he wishes.
Yes. And over the years, I've really shifted from my initial skepticism, but even having observed that healing, and even having found some research in animals that showed that healing, for instance, could affect skin wounds in mice, making them heal much more quickly.
And they're not functioning on the placebo effect, are they?
Exactly. Unless there's something about mice that you and I don't know. But even having that sort of evidence, it took me 2 years before I was willing to let go of being the, quote, objective observer and engage in an exploration that was a personal exploration of healing, where I went to several workshops, therapeutic touch workshop, a Lashan workshop, a Reiki workshop, to explore how I could develop and understand my own healing gift. Because until that time, I really didn't know what I was talking about. So I went on from there to explore as many different scientific studies as I could find. I thought, having gathered about a dozen of these, that this was pretty impressive, but people kept saying, well, it's just a few studies, it's mostly animals, what about people? We don't know the researchers, these were just published in non-medical journals. Any excuse to deny what material worldviews says is impossible.
Boy, people are clinging to that materialist worldview so tightly. Why do you suppose that is? Why would consciousness and spiritual healing, factoring those in, be so threatening? Is your life better or worse since you've accepted this?
It is so much better, Laura Lee. I can't believe how ignorant I was before.
How is it better, Dan? In what far-reaching ways?
Well, by exploring my own spiritual healing gift, and I like the term spiritual healing rather than psychic healing or mental healing.
Because it is through some grace of a higher universal, I don't know, element, isn't it?
I believe it is.
I do. Yeah.
I've come to use a neutral term when I talk in scientific circles, like the infinite source. But for
like
me,
that.
God does the job.
Yep.
That's
why the physicians and the scientists feel so threatened, right? They've kind of knocked God off the equation, off the ladder.
They really have, and some of them, as in various jokes, have presumed that they themselves have taken on that mantle.
That's it. That's the key right there.
But in my personal development, it was a fascinating process where at first I was talking with lots and lots of healers and people who were receiving healing and asking them what their experiences were. The healers would tell me, well, I'm not doing it. I'm just changing the energy field of the person I'm working with. Mm-hmm. Or they would say, I'm not doing it. It's my spirit guides talking to their spirit guides who are doing it.
Mm-hmm. Or I'm just a channel for that life force to flow through right now.
Yes. And at that point, I would say, well, you're really pushing my boggle threshold just by talking about the healing. And I can sort of understand energy fields that you're talking about, but this spirit stuff and this God stuff or Christ stuff, that's a little too much for me. Well, as I became more comfortable with my own healing gift, where I explored how placing my hands near a person brought about physical changes, brought about emotional changes, and also opened me into intuitive awarenesses of what was going on inside the other person that didn't come from language or nonverbal communication. It became very clear to me that there was much more to healing than I had been taught in medical school or in psychology.
Quite a revelation, isn't it?
It really is. It's quite humbling to to know that there are healers who have been around for many years, haven't gone to medical school, were in many cases just born with these gifts, who may know a lot more about what's going on with a person a lot more quickly than any physician who has to go through laboratory tests and various examinations in order to get there.
Now, have you come across, because I've seen some of these, where they compare what a spiritual healer can know and can do as opposed to the standard doctor who goes through the normal routes of testing and all of that?
One of my favorite stories about that question, which is an excellent one, Laura Lee, is from a medical missionary who went to Africa. He found that the people who came to him, the people from that country in Africa who wanted his help, were only coming for infections or for problems that needed surgery. He couldn't understand how this could be, because all of the emotional problems, the various aches and pains that he was used to seeing in Western patients just didn't seem to exist there.
I know the answer.
Well, he started talking to them, and they eventually trusted him enough to say, well, we're going to the local medicine man.
Because he does a very fine job at that.
And exactly, but it went even further. This doctor had the humility to go to the medicine man and say, can you tell me what it is that you're doing that's helping these people so they don't need my help? And gradually, the medicine man came to trust him to the point that he said, you know, the people who come to me who have seen you say that you're actually pretty dense because you have to ask so many questions in order to get to understand what's going on with them.
Oh,
and they come to me and I just tell them what it is.
He just knows directly. Yeah.
Yes. So there are ways of knowing directly what problems are. But the other side of that coin, Laura Lee, is that I know very few healers who have systematically looked at what they do. I know of very few healers who will admit to less than 80% success rates, where they base those figures just on an intuitive impression of who comes back and says they're doing better.
Mm-hmm.
I know of no healer who's taken the trouble to look at those 20% who don't respond.
Interesting.
I know of no healer who has the medical training to pursue this in a systematic way to say, why is it that some of the people who come to me for healing do well with their diabetes, but when they go to Joe X down the road, who is also a healer, they don't respond when they have diabetes? And in fact, Joe says that healing can't help diabetes based on his experience with that. So I've heard so many stories from healers that are based on their intuitive impressions, where the intuitive information is helpful, but it isn't systematically examined as doctors look at their ways of treating. And this is a place I see for doctors and healers to get together so that each can benefit from the wisdom of the other. The research that I've gathered, which now is 191 controlled studies, these are studies where you take a treatment and give it to one group and not to another group, or you may even have a third group where they have a known treatment for comparison. These studies look at pain in people. They look at arthritis and hypertension. They're really impressive. They show that healing can help people with almost no side effects. And these days, medicine is beginning to acknowledge that medicine is the fourth largest cause of death in our country annually. Using medicines that are properly prescribed, we have 100,000 deaths annually.
Because of those side effects.
Yes.
When you say almost no side effects, what are the very few percentage, what type of side effects do some of the spiritual healings have?
The most annoying one is that if you have a pain and you're with a very strong healer, the pain may increase temporarily as you're starting the healing. Experienced healers know that this is an excellent
a good sign.
Sign, yes. And it's likely that you're mobilizing something within the person. You're releasing their tensions or locked up energy or locked up memories of old hurts, because sometimes the emotional hurts get stored as what we experience as physical pain in the body. And as this is starting to come loose, you may have an increase in pain temporarily. If you persist with the healing, it usually will clear up.
Any other side effects? Go ahead.
I've had the other problem, though, with healers who are so good that they take away people's pain too quickly. I've had healers tell me, "I don't understand it, Dan. These people come to me, and in one session, I take away a pain that's been there for years, backaches and headaches and migraines, and they don't come back. And then I hear that after a while, the pain came back, and they didn't return to me." Well, the problem is that these healers don't understand they're actually needing to counsel the people they're helping as well as relieving their symptoms. A person who has a pain oftentimes could ask themselves, "Now, what is my pain saying?" Sometimes a pain speaks as a metaphor, like a pain in the neck could be something that's a pain in the neck in my life. Or a pain in the stomach could be that I'm swallowing down my feelings and getting my guts in an uproar. We have these common terms, these metaphors, that actually imprint our body, and we program our body to take in these feelings and lock them away so that we don't consciously suffer from them. But then the body holds on to them until it can't take it any longer and starts complaining. And its way of complaining is through pain. So first, when I work with someone with healing, I ask them to explore, what could your pain be saying about your life? I've had probably 90% of people, and again here, I don't have a statistical study to prove what I'm saying, but a very high percent, who are very quickly able to identify many things that the pain is saying about their life. And once they acknowledge it, if they deal with what it is, the pain will clear up by itself, so to speak, because they're doing the work of releasing whatever the tension is that's causing the pain.
Which says a lot about the source of illness, doesn't it, in a psychological and consciousness level. I've had a few sessions with energy healers and all of that, and I had very profound results with one guy the first two times, and then the last time I noticed he goes, "Oh, I'm tired, I didn't sleep, blah, blah," and actually nothing, zip. You know, he went through the motions of the healing, but there was just no results. And I personally think that a lot of it has, the efficacy has to do with how well they're feeling, how well they're channeling, how on they are. If they're tired, it's just not, you know, it's not happening.
Yes.
A lot of the time. Have you noticed that as well?
It's even deeper.
Get them
than
on
that.
A good day, but go ahead.
Yes, literally. The physical and emotional and mental state of the healer is really important. But even deeper is the work that they've done on themselves. I do workshops.
Oh, are they a clear vessel?
Yes. Where we explore what might be blocking me from channeling healing with this particular person. If, for instance, someone is talking about their headache, and somewhere their headache has to do with their holding in anger, you can actually check this out for yourself. If you get headaches on your temples, on the sides of your head, that's where the muscles for your jaw grab hold on your skull. And people who are gritting their teeth not to say something that they really want to say oftentimes will literally clench their jaws to the point that those muscles start complaining by hurting.
Interesting. They're just holding on to tension.
Yes. Now, if that headache has to do with an anger that the healer hasn't dealt with in the healer's life, like it might be anger at authority figures, or it might be anger from rejection, well, the healer might really not want to resonate with that particular pain, because it would stir a discomfort in the healer. So there are literally blind spots that we all have from various emotional discomforts that we carry with us.
Which goes back to your earlier questions. Why does healer A able to work with diabetes and get results, for example, and healer B works with diabetes and gets no results? So it has to do with their own resonant energies stuff.
It's probably that, and, literally. I found probably 50 different factors that could influence whether a healing occurs or not.
Oh, and what are some of those? And then I want to also get back to the scientific studies here.
Okay. I've actually got 4 volumes, and this is material from volume 4. It's like if you're looking just at the energies between people, we found that sunspots affect many energies in the spectrum that we're familiar with in Western science. They also seem to affect biological energies. The location, where you're working, can make a difference.
How so? What about the location?
If I'm in a clinic, a medical clinic, where they have fluorescent lights, I find that I get irritable very quickly if I'm not really relaxed and focused. The fluorescent lights have a vibration that I'm not comfortable with, and I find other sensitive people prefer not to have those lights. The direction in which the person is sitting as they're giving the healing and the direction in which the person is receiving the healing, who is receiving the healing,
what's the best direction to face in your experience?
It depends on the person, and you just have to discover this for yourself.
Oh, everybody's different, has their own best direction. That would make sense. Go ahead.
And it may vary with the location and the magnetic field of your particular location.
Okay.
The phase of the moon may have an influence on things. So these are just some general factors. There are also some personal factors, as I mentioned earlier.
Well, we're not going to get anything done if people have to wait for the correct phase of the moon and the right sunspot activity and the right setting and all of this. I mean, does this have enough of effect that it can squash any positive effect, or are these just little tiny things that can enhance if all systems are go, but you can carry on if they're not? So otherwise, you could really stymie yourself here.
Yes, this is, again, an excellent question you're asking, to which we don't have a full answer. My speculation is, if all of these factors line up, maybe that's why sometimes we get very rapid results, which we sometimes call miraculous healings. Even those...
I tend to think, though, Dan, it's just got to be more about intent. Our intent and our sincerity should be able to override all these other little nitpicky issues, it would seem to me. Otherwise, we're just so dependent on external circumstances.
This override is something that I'm cautious of. Literally, I started out thinking exactly like you and looking for those healers who were really potent. I found some of them were truly wonderful human beings by my standards of caring, compassionate, patient, self-sacrificing, really wonderfully loving people. I found some other healers whose way of healing was, pardon the expression, like, heal, damn it, heal.
Okay.
It was like they were there to prove how strong they are.
Oh, get their ego wrapped up in it.
Yes. And they would actually override the will of the person.
That's not good.
And I don't believe it is good.
Yeah. I've also met some total jerks who had some amazing abilities.
Yes.
Too. So it's not like you get it all in one nice, neat package.
Yes, this is true. And that's a puzzle, too.
So, interesting. So you're finding all these variables, which is part of what has made this so difficult to test scientifically and in the laboratory.
Yes. What's been amazing to me is that the medical profession, for many years, was unwilling to publish anything about healing in the medical journals. And that was because no editor would stick his neck out to publish something that other editors weren't publishing and that hadn't been published in his journal before. In the past dozen years, there have been three studies, major studies, published in medical journals, and all of them have been on prayer healing, which to me is one of the farthest out.
Who's doing these prayer studies, and where are they getting the funding for it?
One study was done in California by Randolph Byrd, B-Y-R-D. This was in 1988, in a cardiac intensive care unit. He did this out of dedication to his religious beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
He invited healers who were of Christian faith to send Christian prayer to his patients. There was a group of almost 200 patients receiving the healing, and a group that was 201 patients not receiving the healing.
And we'll tell you the results when we come back. We're talking with Dan Benor. His book is Spiritual Healing, Scientific Validation of a Healing Revolution. We'll be back for more. I'm Laura Lee. Let's get back to our conversation with Dan Benor, author of Spiritual Healing, Scientific Validation of a Healing Revolution. Dan, you're telling us about three major studies that were done on prayer, and in this one, what were the results?
It was absolutely astounding, Laura Lee. There were people who needed less in the treatment group, and these were people who didn't know whether they were actually getting the prayer or not getting the prayer, so it couldn't have been suggestion. In that group, they needed less intubation, less ventilation. They needed fewer antibiotics. They needed less diuretics. And these were highly significant results. They just couldn't have occurred by chance, you know, more than 2 times in 1,000.
Makes sense to me.
It makes absolute sense to me. But you would think if there was such a really good response and there were no side effects, that immediately other people would be studying this, that there'd be money made available, that there would be more publications. Well, it took about 11 years before there was another study done replicating the first study, twice the number of patients, and this time prayer was sent by people of many faiths from many places around the country. Again, they showed significant effects. And again, it was published in a respectable medical journal. This was the Annals of Internal Medicine.
You know, how much of an effect on a scale of, you know, 1 to 10, how many notches was it ratcheted up when prayer was applied?
The responses appeared to be really individual. Some people responded and some didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to quantify what, you know, you're asking.
Did they have certain prayers given to a specific patients or to the group? Were they general prayers? Was it the sender or the receiver, do you think, that made the difference?
Excellent questions again. We don't know how much the receiver has to be open or receptive or not blocking the healing.
It's impossible to quantify these things, yeah.
But it's something really worth studying, because we could do questionnaires and say, do you believe in healing or not believe in it, and see whether people do get
it. How much prayer do you use in your own life, and so forth and so on.
Right.
Yeah.
Although there's a very interesting study I'll tell you about in a minute that puts into question some of that. The third study that was published in a medical journal is a study of healing for AIDS. This was a pilot study with only 20 patients in the treatment and 20 in the control group, but they showed that those people who were sent to healing had fewer infections, they had fewer visits to their doctors, and fewer days in hospital. And again, I would think this should be immediately picked up and followed up on, but because there is no funding for this,
you know, in a sense, though, there is, if our government would get smart and the insurance companies that are footing all of these bills and they want to cut down on healthcare costs, they should just hire people to sit and pray, you know, start their own monasteries and so forth, start their own prayer vigils, you know. So,
absolutely.
start to use this effect to help keep down these spiraling, escalating healthcare costs. But anyway, that would be in an enlightened society, which we're not yet.
I would really love to see that. What I've found from a nurse in England is that side effects of medication can be markedly reduced if you pray over your own medicine, or better yet, if a healer will pray over the medicine. This was a nurse who worked in a cancer unit in England. Her boss didn't want her using her healing because she wasn't healing within the practices of the boss's church.
Oh, God.
Now, England doesn't have a Bill of Rights. And so she had no recourse to stop this woman from restricting her use of healing in the hospital.
You can't do it in school, but you should be able to do it in a hospital.
Yeah. Well, this healer said, I'm just not comfortable not giving healing to the people I'm working with.
Good for her.
Said, I wonder what will happen if I give the healing to their IV bottle.
Right.
With the chemotherapy.
Well, she found, brilliant.
Yeah, that her patients didn't get headaches or nausea or vomiting or all the rest of it, to the point that the other nurses working with her and her supervisor noticed it and couldn't understand and thought maybe she's mixing up the medicine wrong.
Oh, this isn't a lethal dose of or effective dose of chemo because people aren't getting sick over it, right?
Right.
But, well, isn't that why we pray over our food? You know, isn't that a standard procedure that we've kind of let go by the wayside, but same idea? And also we had a rainforest shaman tell us that if you're taking a cup of chamomile tea, you'll have much better effect if you stop for a moment and thank the spirit of the chamomile plant.
Yes.
Yeah.
I heard from several herbalists that they add their healing wishes to the herbs and to the natural medicines.
Well, this rainforest shaman, the wife of the couple, when she was taught from a young age to gather the herbs by her grandmother, and they had particular songs that they would sing while they were gathering. They're all thanks to the spirits.
That's wonderful. I've also heard them say that they go out in the wild with the request that nature guide them to the right remedy for whatever the treatment is that they're trying to effect.
Yeah.
And that's how they find their remedies.
Gee, and that's how we could live again, you know?
Well, there's no reason we can't. In my workshops, one of the things that I've taken to teaching is how to touch our own intuitive awareness, how to really get into that and open it up. We all have it to some degree, but those of us who would prefer to deny it and to use our intuition in ways that help us to deny it. There was wonderful research by a very wise parapsychologist. She was bemused that when they studied individual subjects, people who were guessing cards, whether the person who was looking at the card was looking at a circle or a square or a squiggly line, and they were doing this one by one. It took a long time, and they thought, why don't we just do it in a group where the experimenter will send it to the whole group at the same time? Well, they got highly significant results when they were doing it individually, but when they did it in groups, it didn't work. It just came out null results. This wise parapsychologist said, why don't we look at the results in terms of the believer's results and the disbeliever's results? And they were blown away because the believers got better than chance results. The disbelievers got significantly poorer than chance results. And when you averaged them out, they came out to nothing. But what this means is that the disbelievers have this ability just as much as the believers, except that they turn it around unconsciously, and then they deliberately make a wrong guess. That it's not a conscious thing, but they make this wrong guess that then confirms their disbelief.
Now, tell me about this famous experiment that this girl in her science class ran, where she had healers try to guess which left or right, or what was the story on that? Because to me, and then she got results that seemed to demonstrate that there was no such efficacy towards this particular healing practice, that these people were all frauds, you know, and this was applauded by the skeptics. Oh, they're just no hands-on healing effect. Tell me about this, because I think that this was set up rather poorly, and this is one of those things where you can set it up to confirm your own skepticism if you so choose.
Yes. I've detailed that in the book.
Tell us the details about that.
Little Rosa, who did this, she was 10 years old, and she did it as a science fair project. And amazingly, this science fair project was picked up by the Journal of the American Medical Association and published as a study. What's extraordinary about that is that doctors who have all sorts of training and research often can't get their articles published unless they've been peer-reviewed by other doctors, but this was published immediately. The editor added his comments saying that on the basis of this study, which was a study of whether a healer could sense whether Little Rose's hand was near the right or the left hand of the healer, the fact that the healer couldn't prove that she could sense Rose's hand meant that healing was worthless.
See, that's a bait and switch. I mean, that's not even comparing apples and oranges.
Yes.
And I'm surprised any healer would participate in this, because what is sensing where the hand is has anything to do with whether a healing can be transferred through energy from one person to another. They're two different equations there.
There is some connection, although you're right that it isn't a logical conclusion that they drew from this study to say that healing doesn't work.
Yeah.
When healers give healing with their hands, and I've learned to do this, I can hold my hands near a person, and it's possible to feel differences over parts of their body where they're suffering some illness or pain or discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
So the hands become
very sensitive.
Sensitized to various energy fields around the body. When healers do this, when I do it, I scan with my hands. I move them up and down the body and back and forth across the body, looking for differences and for shifts in the sensations as I'm doing this. In this study, Little Rosa held her hand absolutely still above the hand of the healer. So it was very different from how a healer would be using her hands in actual clinical use. It's also possible to turn off your energy field. If you work with another person and if they send you energy, you can feel a stronger sensation from their energy field with your hand opposite their hand. If they at some point, without telling you in any way, stop sending, you can sense when they're stopping sending their energy. So a person can enhance it and they can retard the projection of energy. So again, if Little Rosa was wanting to demonstrate that there was no sensation, even unconsciously, she could have shut it off.
Well, that's a good explanation. Yeah.
The last and most impressive part of that study is that if you look at their results, you actually see significant negative results.
Significant negative results? How do you mean?
Meaning that the results are significantly below chance.
Oh, interesting.
So they unwittingly actually demonstrated a healing effect.
Uh-huh.
An energy field effect.
Or maybe she was setting out to fool the energy healers and, you know.
Well, she's the daughter of one of the most well-known skeptics in the country.
Oh, they never put that forward, did they?
No.
Who was she the daughter of?
I don't remember, but he's one of the authors of the article.
Interesting.
Yes.
Well, gee, that explains a lot.
I think so.
Yeah. So you were telling us that there was another very interesting study that you wanted to share. What was that?
There was a study by Scott Walker, a physician in Albuquerque, who received one of the first National Institute of Health Complementary and Alternative Therapy grants for research looking at healing effects on people who have alcoholism.
Healing effects on alcoholics.
Right. To see if prayers sent from a distance could decrease the rate of alcoholism and improve the rate of treatment. They found no significant effects in the variables they were looking at. But when they went through their data with a fine-tooth comb, as good researchers do, they later discovered that those people whose families were praying for them tended to have a much higher rate of dropout from treatment.
Meaning what? That they dropped out from the treatment program?
Yeah.
Meaning they quit?
They quit.
And so they just said, oh, I'm content to be an alcoholic here.
We don't know. The study didn't
look... Or they felt they were cured, or what? Interesting.
The study didn't look at this in depth. But there's a suspicion that prayer could actually have a negative effect. And we often see in families of people who are substance users or abusers that there's a codependency. And it could be a codependency with the substance. And there could be a codependency with other people in the family.
Interesting. So they, in a sense, were looking at their own boat rocking if this person got well, as much as they think they wanted on the surface.
We can only speculate about that, Laura Lee. But
Interesting.
It seems a possibility really worth investigating.
How would you go about investigating that one?
Boy, it would really be complicated because you'd need to look at the families, you'd need to look at the relationships between people. It would really be a complicated study.
So people who were praying for their family members who were alcoholics and in treatment to get better actually did worse.
The people who were in the alcohol treatment didn't stay in the program is all that we know.
Oh, because that's all the data said.
Yes.
Interesting. Huh.
So we have... probably from these 191 studies, far more questions than we have answers.
That doesn't surprise me.
But overall, out of the 191 studies, there were 124 that showed significant effects, and there were 24 which were really good studies and showed highly significant effects.
In what modalities were they researching that got the highest effects?
Well, the greater number are in animals and plants because you have a much more compliant organism.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a mouse going to a hairdresser who's going to be saying, there, dear, and messing up your research study.
Too many variables with we humans, right?
Because hairdressers and cab drivers and bartenders are some of our better therapists.
Oh, interesting.
But they do tend to interfere with scientific studies.
Because they're changing and influencing the minds of these subjects.
So if you look at the animal studies, or if you look at the plant studies, where there aren't these factors, you, in many cases, get much clearer results.
There was a whole range of modalities that were tested beyond prayer and hands-on healing and on so forth and so forth. What were some of the modalities that showed the highest test results?
The studies of therapeutic touch, which have been done mostly by nurses as their master's and doctoral dissertations, have been the most numerous and because of that, have the higher percent of positive results. Therapeutic touch is done holding your hands near the body with a centering of the healer, an intense to heal, and with various sensations in the healer's hands guiding the healing.
Hmm.
There's also Reiki, which is done either in a similar way or sending healing from a distance. Now, Reiki is fascinating because it also uses Japanese symbols that facilitate the healing.
How does this symbol facilitate the healing?
You're asking a question to which no one has a real clear answer. The speculation I have is that it becomes like a focus for what's called a morphogenetic field.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Rupert Sheldrake has written some wonderful books looking at how various species have intuition, for instance, like birds can mm-hmm. fly and migrate, just knowing where they're supposed to go. The mama bird feeds the baby bird. How does she know to do that? Well, we speculate that individuals within that species contribute to a collective consciousness of that species.
How does that translate to a symbol, that we humans would have a field built up around a symbol so that it transmits its meaning, or that it, I don't know, twigs with some deep inherent collective unconscious a la Jung or something like that?
Well, if a healer takes this symbol and prays over it, then maybe it begins to acquire what we are calling a morphogenetic mm-hmm. resonance.
Okay.
And then if a lot of people use the same symbol, then that symbol could acquire
a stronger and stronger field around it.
Now, I used to be skeptical about that, but there was a Chinese researcher who sent me a paper for the International Journal of Healing and Caring online. I mentioned this because it's a journal where people can publish these things that most other journals wouldn't accept. This is a study where children could sense the symbol, a Chinese symbol, in their fingers, in their hands, without looking at it.
Hmm.
And to be sure that they weren't looking at it, they put these symbols on a piece of paper and crumpled paper up inside a bag where the children's arms were tied into the bag so they couldn't remove their hands to cheat. They were able to reproduce very complex symbols by doing that. And then by chance, the researchers put in a word, a symbol for Buddha. And the child who had that symbol didn't come up with a symbol, but said, "I see a being of light."
Oh, my goodness.
And then when they took the word Buddha and they cut it in half, so it was Bud mm-hmm. and Da, mm-hmm. and they gave the child each half of the symbol, the child came up with the half symbol image.
Hmm.
So it seemed like the whole symbol needed to be there for the child to resonate with it. They then took Hebrew and Arabic and English letters, words that meant Christ or I am that I am in Hebrew or Allah in Arabic. And the children were able, again, to sense something extraordinary when they held those pieces of paper.
Isn't that wonderful? Wow.
So we're beginning to find ways to research things that you would ordinarily not even believe could be studied.
Mm. Look at the power in a symbol, too.
Yes.
Boy. So what do you think is the nature of healing? What's going on in the healing process? And we're running out of time here.
Healing has many, many layers, Laura Lee. The first, and the one that I've come to focus on more and more as I've worked, is self-healing. I believe it's better if we give a person the way to fish rather than giving them the fish. So I teach people as many ways of self-healing as I can. Sometimes, though, people just want someone else to do it and take away their suffering or help them over a crisis. So an outside healer may be an enormous help to a person. The outside healer can work through compassion, through energy fields, through prayer, through inviting awareness to come in, because sometimes the person might have hurt themselves emotionally in the past, or they might have been abused, and this other person, the healer, could help the person release the old hurt,
mm-hmm.
which then releases body symptoms as well. So there are many, many ways that healing can occur.
Quite an adventure, quite a journey, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It's the most fascinating game that I know. I'm reminded of Ashley Brilliant, who's a wonderful cartoonist, who said that life is the only game in which the object of the game is to learn the rules.
Life is the only game in which the object of the game is to learn the rules. Generally in a game, we're given the rules ahead of time, but not in life. We've got to learn it as we go.
Yes.
Yeah, good point. And so the whole process of healing is such an important path in life, isn't it? It's kind of the reason I think we're here, to heal and
so.
To grow. Yeah.
I would love to see more doctors and nurses open to their own healing gifts. I know of doctors and nurses who are really very talented as healers. They have to do it very quietly for the most part because their colleagues won't tolerate it.
Mm-hmm.
I know doctors who can tell what's wrong with a person as soon as they walk in the room.
But then they have to run the test to validate it to make the insurance.
Yes.
Then they, yeah, happy. Interesting. Well, Dan, thank you for this conversation. I appreciate it, and for elucidating these various studies. Thank you. That was Dan Benor, and good luck on your healing journey and life's journey as well. Thanks for listening. I'm Laura Lee.
This has been Conversation for Exploration, and I want to thank you for joining us on our tour around the universe at large here tonight. And join us next time. I'm Laura Lee.